Balak and Balaam. Be careful what you wish for. Act 1. Setting the scene.
The people called the Israelites were on the move to settle in the land promised to them by God. At this point, they had travelled to the plains of Moab and camped along the Jordan River, across from the city of Jericho. Balak, the son of Zippor, was king of Moab at that time. He had heard and seen how Israel had fought and defeated the Amorites, and he was extremely anxious, because there were so many of these Israelites, and they were now bordering his kingdom. And he wasn't the only frightened leader. His elders were very worried.
This horde is going to eat up everything around us, just like an ox eats up the grass in the field.
Balak knew from the stories about the Israelites that their God had delivered them from the mega power of Egypt. Egypt! And was reportedly protecting and blessing them. That would explain their unbelievable success in spreading out across the land. He realised that he would need to have supernatural help and protection if he was to be able to defeat them on the borders of his own land. So Balak sent elders to summon the most effective prophet he knew, Balaam, the son of Beor, who was staying at Pethor in his native land, near the Euphrates River. If anyone could bring an effective curse on these people, Balaam could. His reputation was immense. So he came up with this message for Balaam.
A people has come out of Egypt. They cover the face of the land and have settled next to me. Now come and put a curse on these people, because they are too powerful for me. Perhaps then I will be able to defeat them and drive them out of the land. For I know that whoever you bless is blessed. Whoever you curse is cursed.
Act 2. Leaving to fetch Balaam.
The elders left, taking with them Balak's message and a handsome fee for Balaam's services. When they came to Balaam, they gave him Balak's message. Balaam thought about it and said to them,
Spend the night here in my home, and I will report back to you in the morning with the answer that the Lord gives me.
So the elders stayed with him. Balaam sought the will of God, and God spoke to him.
Who are these men with you?
Now, that sounds like a kind of anticlimax question, doesn't it? God obviously knew full well who the men were and why they had come. But maybe he wanted to hear what Balaam's attitude to them was. What might Balaam reveal about himself and his thoughts about this visit from Balak's officials? Balaam was quite straightforward in his reply.
Balak, the son of Zippor, king of Moab, sent me this message. A people that has come out of Egypt covers the face of the land. Now come and put a curse on them for me. Perhaps then I will be able to fight them and drive them away.
Do not go with them. You must not put a curse on these people. They have been blessed by me.
The next morning, Balaam got up and broke the news.
Go back to your own country. The Lord has refused to let me go with you.
Act 3. Back in Moab.
So the elders returned to Balak. It wasn't going to go well. Keep it short, they thought.
But Balaam refused to come with us.
What?
He said that the Lord had refused to let him come with us.
At the risk of understatement, Balak was not used to refusals. He summoned his chief advisers and they puzzled over this development. Their best guess was that Balaam had been insulted by what he considered an inadequate fee for his services against such a powerful god as that of the Israelites. And Balak, a businessman after all, agreed. Balaam was a professional prophet. If he expected a higher fee than the very generous one that he'd already been offered, well, so be it. So he sent a different group of court officials. There were more of them, and they were all more distinguished than the first group. That would set the tone properly. He also gave them a new message, and they took it to Balaam.
Act 4. Back with Balaam.
This is what Balak, son of Zippor, king of Moab, says. Do not let anything keep you from coming to me, because I will reward you handsomely and do whatever you say. Come and put a curse on these people for me.
Balaam thought about it and said to them,
Even if Balak gave me all the silver and gold in his palace, I could not do anything great or small to go beyond the command of the Lord my God. Now, spend the night here in my home, and I will see what else the Lord will tell me.
The officials were far from happy, knowing the repercussions that they could expect back in the court. That night, God came to Balaam again.
Since this king Balak is so persistent, sending these men to follow up his earlier summons, I will let you go with them, but only say and do what I tell you. Balak should be more careful about what he asks for.
Act 5. A Donkey and the Angel of the Lord.
Balaam was a little confused, but he got up the next morning, saddled his donkey, and set out with the Moabite officials. On the way, though, he began to have second thoughts about crossing Balak and maybe incurring his wrath, perhaps even losing his fee. His attitude changed, and he was wondering about how he might be able to serve both God and Balak. God was aware of this change in Balaam and was angry with him, and so the angel of the Lord stood in the road to block his progress. Neither Balaam, who was riding on his donkey, nor his two servants who were with him, saw this. But when the donkey saw the angel of the Lord standing in the road, oh, did I mention that the angel of the Lord had drawn his sword and held it in his hand? Well, the donkey veered off the road into a field. Balaam beat it to get it back on the road. A bit later, the angel of the Lord stood in front of them again, choosing a narrow path through some vineyards that they were riding through with walls on both sides. When the donkey saw the angel of the Lord, it stopped and pressed itself against a wall, crushing Balaam's foot against it. So he beat the donkey again. Then the angel of the Lord moved on ahead of them and stood at a narrow spot where there was no room for manoeuvre. When the donkey saw the angel of the Lord, it lay down under Balaam, refusing to move. Balaam was angry and beat it again with his staff. Then the Lord opened the donkey's mouth, and it turned to look at Balaam.
What have I done wrong to you to make you beat me 3 times?
Balaam was a little taken aback by his donkey talking to him, but he regained some composure and drew attention to the 3 times that the donkey had suddenly stopped, explaining that the donkey's job was to keep moving as Balaam directed him.
But what about the angel?
What angel?
What angel? The one standing there in front of us, the one with the drawn sword.
Balaam's servants thought that Balaam had gone mad. They could only hear the donkey braying, and it seemed as if Balaam was having a conversation with it. They still couldn't see the angel. Balaam, forgetting for a moment that he was talking to a donkey, thought that the donkey telling him that an angel was standing there in front of them with a sword in his hand was just a step too far.
Now you're trying to make a fool of me. If only I had a sword in my hand, I would show you.
Look, am I not your own, your very own donkey, whom you have always ridden? Have I been in the habit of talking to you? Have I been in the habit of making sudden stops in the road and refusing to go on?
Well, no, I suppose not.
At that point, when Balaam was beginning to think properly about what was happening, the Lord opened Balaam's eyes. He saw the angel of the Lord standing there with his sword drawn. He was seriously afraid, bowed low, and fell face down on the ground before him. The angel of the Lord spoke to him then.
Why have you beaten your donkey 3 times?
The donkey? You're concerned about the donkey?
Balaam, I have come here to block you because your attitude is reckless and you cannot be allowed to compromise the Lord's will in this matter. The donkey saw me and turned away from me all 3 times. You would have seen me if your heart had been right before God. But you just kept on going. If the donkey had not veered away and stopped, I would have killed you to prevent you compromising God's will. And by the way, I would have spared the donkey.
I have sinned. I see that now. And I did not realise you were standing in the road to block me. If you are able to have mercy, but cannot let me continue with God's message to Balak, I will go back to my home.
No. Go with the officials, but only say what I tell you. Balak should be more careful about what he asks for.
Act 6. Arriving in Moab.
So, Balaam was allowed to go ahead with Balak's officials. When Balak heard that Balaam was coming, sensing success, he didn't wait for him to come to the palace, but actually went out to meet him at a Moabite town on the border of the Arnon River, right at the edge of his land. However, when Balaam got there, Balak took a characteristically ungracious and unwise approach when he met him.
Did I not send you an urgent summons? The Israelites are on the move. Why didn't you come to me the first time I sent for you? Did you really think I would not be able to reward you with a fine fee?
Well, I have come now, but I can't just tell you what you might want to hear.
What?
I can't just tell you what I might want to say to you. I must say only what God puts in my mouth.
Right, well, let's get on with it.
So Balaam went with Balak to a place called Kiriat Huzot, and Balak arranged for cattle and sheep to be sacrificed, giving some to Balaam and the officials who were with him, so that they would be joined together in the ritual. That all took quite some time. The next morning, Balak took Balaam up to a high point called Bamot Baal. From there, they could see something of the extent of the Israelite camp. So Balaam would be able to see the extent of the Israelite menace and would realise what Balak required of him.
Act 7. Balaam's first message.
Build me 7 altars here and prepare 7 bulls and 7 rams for me.
Glad that the proceedings had finally started, Balak did as Balaam said, and the two of them offered a bull and a ram on each altar. Things had picked up and Balak was pleased.
Stay here beside your offering while I go over there a little to be alone for a moment. Perhaps the Lord will come to meet with me. Whatever he reveals to me, I will tell you.
Perhaps, perhaps. I bring this preeminent prophet all this way, and at great expense, and I get a perhaps.
Balaam went off to a barren high spot nearby. He could see both the Israelites and Balak and his retinue from there. And God did meet with him.
Lord, I have prepared 7 altars, and on each altar I have offered a bull and a ram.
Go back to Balak and give him this word which I am giving you now.
So he went back to Balak, who was still standing beside his sacrificial offering and all his officials. Balak's expectation was high.
Balak brought me from Aram. The king of Moab brought me from the eastern mountains. Come, he said to me, curse Jacob for me. Come, denounce Israel. But how can I curse those whom God has not cursed? How can I denounce those whom the Lord has not denounced? From these high places in the hills, I can see them. With this height advantage, I can see how successful this people are. These people who consider themselves to be different from all others. Look at them. There are far too many to count. Their God is certainly with them. I can only pray that I will be so blessed by God and die a righteous man like them.
The Israelites couldn't hear any of this, of course, but it didn't go down well with Balak.
What are you saying? What are you doing? What have you done to me? I brought you to curse my enemies, but you have blessed them.
I have to say what the Lord puts in my mouth.
Act 8. Balaam's second message.
Balak was too upset to continue. He could see his plans falling apart. He dismissed Balaam and returned to his tent to consult with his chief advisers. They puzzled over this development, and their best guess was that Balaam had been daunted by the size of the Israelite camp, perhaps imagining the likely size of their army. And Balak, a politician after all, agreed. Balaam was a professional prophet, who expected to be able to work in safety. So be it. So he decided to ask for Balaam's service from a different vantage point, one from which they would only see a part of the outskirts of the Israelite camp. Perhaps, looking down on them from high up, Balaam would be less intimidated.
Come with me to another place where you can see them. You will not see them all, but only the outskirts of their camp, and from there curse them for me.
So they went to the field of Sophim, on the top of Mount Pisgah. And once again, Balak had 7 altars built and offered a bull and a ram on each altar. Afterwards, Balaam approached Balak and spoke to him.
Stay here beside your offering while I meet with God over there a little.
Balak was impatient and a little concerned, remembering what had happened the last time he had let Balaam wander off a bit. Sure enough, the Lord met with Balaam and gave him another word.
Go back to Balak and give him this word which I am giving to you now.
Balak was still there, standing beside his offering and his officials.
What did the Lord say this time?
Arise, Balak, and listen. Hear me, son of Zippor. God is not human, that he should lie or change his mind. Does he speak and then not act accordingly? Does he promise and then not fulfil his promise? I have received a command to bless. He has blessed, and I cannot change it. No misfortune will be seen in Jacob, no misery observed in Israel. The Lord their God is with them. The shout of the king is among them. God brought them out of Egypt. They have the strength of a wild ox. There is no divination possible against Jacob, no evil omens against Israel. It will now be said of Jacob and of Israel, see what God has done. The people rise like a lioness. They rouse themselves like a lion that does not rest till it devours its prey and drinks the blood of its victims.
Balak could barely contain his rage and frustration.
What are you saying? What are you doing? Don't say or do anything. Don't curse them or bless them. Don't say anything at all.
Didn't I tell you that I must do whatever the Lord says to do?
Act 9. Balaam's third message.
Balak was beside himself. He had insulted the integrity of this esteemed prophet and was now possibly at risk himself. But he had come too far to give up now. So he decided to try one more time to obtain the curse on the Israelites that he so badly wanted. He decided to take Balaam to the top of Mount Peor, overlooking a spread of the wasteland below where the Israelites were camped.
Come, let me take you to yet another place. Perhaps it will please God to let you curse them for me from there.
Build me 7 altars here and prepare 7 bulls and 7 rams for me.
Balak did as Balaam directed, and a bull and a ram were sacrificed on each altar. But by this time, Balaam really had realised that the Lord was committed to blessing Israel. So he didn't walk away some distance and practice his usual rituals in an attempt to discover the will of God. Instead, he just looked out over the wilderness below him, watching the camp of the Israelites down there. The Spirit of the Lord came on him while he watched the Israelites, and he received a third word from God, which he delivered to Balak.
The prophecy of Balaam, the son of Beor, the prophecy of one whose eyes see clearly, the prophecy of one who hears the words of God, who sees a vision from the Almighty, who falls prostrate, and whose eyes are opened. How beautiful are your tents, Jacob, your dwelling places, Israel. Like valleys they spread out, like gardens beside a river, like aloes planted by the Lord, like cedars beside the waters. Water will flow from their buckets, their seed will have abundant water. Their king will be greater than Agag, their kingdom will be exalted. God brought them out of Egypt. They have the strength of a wild ox. They devour hostile nations and break their bones in pieces. With their arrows they pierce them. Like a lion they crouch and lie down. Like a lioness, who dares to rouse them? May those who bless you be blessed, and may those who curse you be cursed.
Balak could contain himself no longer. He was furious with Balaam and faced up to him aggressively.
I summoned you to curse my enemies, but you have blessed them three times. Get away from here at once and go home. I said I would reward you handsomely, but your God has kept you from being rewarded.
At the risk of repeating myself, did I not tell the second set of messengers that you sent me that even if you gave me all the silver and gold in your palace, I could do nothing of my own accord, whether good or bad, if it went against the command of the Lord? Did I not tell them that I can only say what the Lord says to me? I will now return to my people, but before I do, let me warn you of what the Israelite people will do to your people in the days to come.
Act 10. Balaam's 4th, 5th, 6th and 7th messages.
Balaam then gave another message from God to Balak.
The prophecy of Balaam, the son of Beor, the prophecy of one whose eyes see clearly, the prophecy of one who hears the words of God, who has knowledge from the Most High, who sees a vision from the Almighty, who falls prostrate, and whose eyes are opened. I see him, but not now. I behold him, but not near. A star will come out of Jacob, a scepter will rise out of Israel. He will crush the foreheads of Moab, the skulls of all the people of Sheth. Edom will be conquered, Seir his enemy will be conquered, but Israel will grow strong. A ruler will come out of Jacob and destroy the survivors of the city.
But God was not finished yet. Balak had not at all been careful in what he wished for, and now he received far more than he or his neighbours had bargained for. Balaam continued. In his mind's eye, Balaam saw Amalek.
Amalek was first among the nations, but their end will be utter destruction.
Then he saw the Kenites.
Your dwelling place is secure. Your nest is set in a rock, yet you Kenites will be destroyed when Asher takes you captive.
Then he gave a final message.
Alas, who can live when God does this? Ships will come from the shores of Cyprus. They will subdue Asher and Eber, but they too will come to ruin.
Act 11. The End of the Matter.
And then Balaam returned home. And Balak went his own way, as he had been doing all along.
Balak and Balaam, Be Careful What You Wish For. Written and directed by Walter Riggins. Edited and engineered by Neil Chappell. The cast: Balaam, Rube McRae. Balak, Martin Spain. Donkey, Helen Keithley. Moabite Elder and Court Official, Elizabeth Sweeney Smith. Scene Announcer, Debbie Taylor. God and Angel of the Lord, Neil Chappell. Narrator, Walter Riggins. Music came from purpleplanet.com. This is a Castlegate production for the Congregational Federation.